This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Coming up next, conversations on human rights with Speak Up, Kōrero Tia, here on Plains FM.
E nā mana, e nā reo, e nā hō e whā. Tēnā koutou katoa. No mai ki tēne hōtaka. Speak Up, Kōrero Tia. Tune in as our guests Speak Up, sharing their unique and powerful experiences and opinions. And may you also be inspired to speak up when the moment's right. No mai haere mai, welcome to Speak Up Kōrero Tia. I'm your host Sally Carlton, based here in Christchurch. Today's topic, we're going to be thinking about the New Zealand Disability Strategy and placing it in context, the domestic and the global context. The reason for the topic, well, the Disability Strategy is currently undergoing a revision from its 2001 original, and the second round of consultation is opening up on the 25th of July. This show will hopefully raise some awareness and tell you why you should be having a say in taking part. Looking at the strategy as a document, but also situating that document within the wider context will be some other guests later on in the show. Particularly important will be the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, or the CRPD. But here to set the scene with us today is Nikki Wagner, Minister for Disability Issues. Welcome, Nikki.
Kia ora, Sally.
Nikki, thanks so much for taking the time, making the time to come in and see us today. And I think we might dive straight in because we are just doing this 10-ish minute segment. And I thought I might start off by asking, what are some of the high points of being Minister for Disabilities?
That's a good question, Sally. It wasn't something that I imagined when I was a child that I would be, but when the Prime Minister asked me if I would take the portfolio, he reflected on the fact that Christchurch is rebuilding the city and we want to make it as accessible as possible. So I'm also involved with the regeneration of Christchurch, so I have two hats there, and I think that's important. But also in the past, as a local MP, I'd had quite a lot to do with the local disability community, and in particular I'd had a couple of young interns, disabled interns, and that had been really quite successful, and I'd introduced the Prime Minister to him. So I think he thought, yes, I could take the portfolio.
And what do you enjoy about the role?
Well, it's a very active role, actually. People are very keen to engage with the government, and the government's really moved its thinking and how it works with the disability community quite significantly over the last 5 or 6 years. And really, all our work is to do with co-design of policies. So the ministry or the Department of Disability Issues is focused on working with the disability community, working with the disabled people's organisations, and actually making sure that we road test our policies before they go out. And there's a lot of change in the sector as well. So that's exciting.
And you said it's changed in the last 5 or 6 years to being more co-collaboration, I suppose, co-production. What was it like then beforehand? How were policies rolled out?
Well, I think it's like anything in government in the past. We tended to sit in ivory towers and make policies and says, that sounds good, and then sort of broadcast them on the nation. But we're learning very much that unless you work with the people on the ground, how do you know what's going to work at the other end? And actually, how do you know what's going to be of value? Because I think that's the bottom line. The bottom line is that we do enormous amount of work with the disability community, but we want to make sure that the money that we spent is spent in the right places. And before I was a minister, we didn't actually know how much money we were spending. So we've done a lot of work trying to find out where that money's going. And of course, there's a great focus now on social investment. So in other words, seeing where the needs are and trying to spend the money in the right place. And you'll be interested to know that when you take the money from education, health, social development and the other things that sort of cluster around it, nearly $5 billion is spent on disability every year. So there's a large amount of money, but we need to make sure that we put the money in the right place.
It's nice to hear you talking about this co-production because it's what we call the human rights approach, including people in that very early stage, not making any decisions without including affected people.
So that's nothing great. without me is exactly. A pretty strong call from the disability sector. But it just seems to be common sense to me, mm-hmm. You know.
Now, recently in June 2006, you attended the Conference of State Parties to the CRPD, the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. What would you like to tell us about that experience?
Well, it sounds really boring, all those acronyms, but it was fantastic. Really, the focus for me was to support Robert Martin to get a position on the Committee for the Rights of Disabled People, the United Nations Committee. And he's a fantastic New Zealander. I don't know if your listeners know about Robert, but I'll give you a quick pencil sketch. He lives in Whanganui. He's in his late 50s. As a child, he was born with a learning disability and he was institutionalised. And until he was about 14 or 15, he lived in various institutions across New Zealand. And he lived the life of somebody away from his family and really saw a lot of the things that the reason that we've got rid of institutions going forward. But he managed to rise above that. He's worked in his community. He's been involved in sport. He has a great love of life. And he's been an advocate for the disabled community internationally as well as locally. So 2 or 3 years ago, Minister Turia nominated him to be on this committee. And we've been lobbying for him ever since. And on the day, he was elected, and it was incredible excitement, and it was a really important step forward. It was important in terms of people with learning disabilities. They tend to be a bit of the silent group in the disability sector, and I think it was really wrong that we could have had the convention and a committee supporting it for 10 years without anyone from the learning disability community. And so when New Zealand nominated the first nomination and the fact that he was selected, suddenly that committee becomes more diverse. It is truly about nothing about us without us, nobody left behind. And so there was a great celebration. We had a big party. It was a great relief because a lot of people had done a lot of work. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs had worked really hard, and Robert worked enormously hard. He had 2 or 3 days that he met 70 different countries. So it was a well-deserved win, and I think it's going to be very good for Robert, for New Zealand, and for the United Nations.
In terms of it being very good, what do you see the likely implications being of this nomination?
Well, it's symbolic for a start, the fact that somebody with a learning disability is there, but they're going to learn that not only is he there, but he's actually contributing very well. And it will connect us up to that committee much more closely.
Just to shift the focus slightly, New Zealand Parliament recently tabled the optional protocol to the CRPD. That was at the end of June 2016. Just a couple of words on what would the optional protocol enable in terms of disability rights, and do we have a timeline for when a decision might be being made?
Well, yes, it's important that we supported that optional protocol. It's something we signed the convention, and actually, interestingly enough, New Zealand was absolutely significant in that convention. Our permanent resident in the New York, Don Mackay, he led that. And so even when you go to the UN now, they remember us as the person that made the convention happen. And that's been really strong. But the optional protocol is part of that. It's optional, and it's about taking complaints from your country to the United Nations. And so we've signed up for that. I don't know how much difference it's going to make. Part of it is the fact that we're saying, yes, here we are. We believe we're doing the right thing. If you want to take a complaint, we feel confident. So that's symbolic too. But basically, any complaints have to be dealt with in New Zealand first. And some of those issues are quite difficult, but we tend to be able to sort them out here. So I'm not sure whether it's going to make a difference, but the fact that it's there is really important.
Yeah, it's definitely symbolic, again, that symbolic step that New Zealand has taken. Now, after the break, we're going to be discussing the disability strategy in a bit more detail. Have you got any comments, thoughts, opinions you'd like to raise for our listeners before that?
Yes. First of all, I want to encourage everybody to have a look at the draft, which you say is coming out on the 25th of July. It's really important that this disability strategy reflects what the disability community, their families, the greater community service operators are seeing and wanting, because we're going to be using it as a guide for the next 10 years. The original disability strategy that was created in 2001 has been seen as world-leading, But things have changed dramatically since then. For example, we've got the convention. So things have changed dramatically how we think about disability, how we work with the disability community. So this new strategy is to reflect that. But one of the other things that's important too is that the original strategy stood alone. This strategy is now linked up with the Disability Action Plan. And so that's the operational arm of the strategy. So we believe that we'll be able to take the strategy and really get some action on it.
And will people be able to access both the strategy and the accompanying action plan?
Everything is there. Everything's on the internet. We'll be having more meetings around the country. Hundreds of people, maybe even thousands of people, had their say at the first time of the disability strategy. We had meetings in 18 different places around the country. We've got an online website called jointheconversation.nz. So we had a lot of information. And so we've gathered that all up. We've put it into the draft document. And now we're road testing it. So we need as many road testers as possible.
Fantastic. So I would encourage everybody to have a look at it and definitely have a say as well. Any final words, Nikki?
No, just that the disability community, I think, is in good heart. We are co-designing the policies. We're working together to set the direction through the strategy. We've got an action plan, and I feel very excited about the future.
Great. Thank you so much for taking the time to come in.
Cheers.
Your name, your name.
Nō mai hoki mai. Welcome back to Speak Up Kōrerotia, here on Plains FM 96.9. We've just been talking with Nikki Wagner, and now we've got some new guests in the studio to discuss disability rights, and specifically the new disability strategy for New Zealand. We've got Megan, Gary, Robbie and Shane. If you could all please introduce yourselves, tell us a little bit about yourselves and why you're taking part in today's conversation.
All right, well, I'll kick it off. My name's Robbie. I'm 27 years old and I'm a student at the University of Otago. And I have quite a big interest in young people who live with disabilities and also disability rights. I have a disability myself. I live with phocomelia, which means that the bones in the lower half of my body didn't develop properly before birth. So I walk on a prosthetic leg that's called Lucy Leg. So that's a little bit about my background and what I bring to the discussion and also to the reference group.
Robbie, could you just tell us a little bit about the reference group, please, seeing as you've touched on it?
Yeah, so the call went out late last year to form, an expert reference group. All of us on the reference group we either live with a disability or some way engaged in the disability community. And what we do is we've come together to kind of, advise and direct the process of the revision or creating this new disability strategy.
Thanks. And Gary, you're also on the group?
Yes, out to the Koto. Give me some questions.
You're a busy man, Gary.
Thank you. I've been active in this sector for 40-odd years. I'm looking forward to the work of the outcome from the discussions that we're having.
In this end, it leaves me. My name's Megan McCoy and I'm the Director of the Office for Disability Issues. I'm involved because my office is leading this process to develop the new disability strategy, but also because disability and the rights of disabled people is something I'm really passionate about and committed to on a personal level too.
And lucky last me. I guess I've lived experience. I got a learning disability and going from a country high school to a city high school, I've sort of got those experience of what can work and what can't work, so that's sort of why I got involved.
In disability rights?
Yes.
What do you mean by the differences between the rural and city high schools?
Sort of a rural high school is sort of more family orientated and more, I wouldn't say a city high school is, but it's sort of less.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so why are we developing then a new strategy in 2016?
Well, the last one having been developed in 2001, I think that's 15 years ago, and a lot has happened in the last 15 years. I was 10 years old at the time when the first one was created, and, you think at that time we didn't have Wi-Fi, Google wasn't a thing, Facebook wasn't a thing, and well, of course, we also didn't have the 2008 CRPD, the Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. So all of these things have, developed, not to mention the technology and the medical science that has developed. We've got new issues facing us, and while this original strategy was fantastic, we have new generations coming through, and we need to take into account all of these new things that have come up along the journey, and we need to work towards the next 10 years and what's going to come up for us in these next 10 years and how we're going to ensure that that all New Zealanders, regardless of ability or disability, are living in a safe and equal and dignified environment.
And could you please explain a little bit about how the 2001 strategy has influenced the CRPD? And then how the CRPD has influenced the 2016 strategy. I guess the linkages between those three documents.
Yeah, so of course the 2001 strategy that came first, and we had a really quite prominent influence and input into the development of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities in 2008. think, you know, we had some key roles in the drafting of that convention, including some quite important input from in the ad hoc committee and the official delegation. Now, both of those documents, the 2001 strategy and the 2008 CRPD, have had strong influence on the 2016 strategy that we're putting together now. I think the 2001 strategy was brilliant.
All right. I think the 2001 strategy had more grounding to it, but oh, I don't know, that might have been me just reading into it. But what, I don't know, this is just the first consultation with the new disability strategy. We'll see how far we go from the next stage, if it keeps more grounding from there or not.
And Shane, you were the only person in this conversation who wasn't part of the reference group. So as someone who's looking, someone is looking from the outside.
So I might just be reading in a little too much.
Yeah. As someone who's looking from the outside, have you got any other comments on it?
It's good we're updating it because things like Wi-Fi and all those sorts of technologies weren't available. 10 years ago?
Yeah, 15 actually.
15, oh wow. So those sorts of things weren't available, but I don't think we should take in a whole huge evaluation of it, because there's still some good things like I said in it, but don't need to go too far.
You know, we've been influenced by the original one, and it's developed into this new document, and the CRPD also is at the core of the 2016 strategy. Together with the Treaty of Waitangi, actually, those two key documents are at the forefront of the 2016 strategy. They're right there up front with their values and principles, and the strategy works in really well with that. They all complement each other in a really, really wonderful way, actually.
It's interesting you mentioned the Treaty of Waitangi. Could you give me more of a sense of how it's influenced the 2016 strategy?
So the CRPD is an international document that many countries from around the world have signed up for. But we needed to recognise that the 2016 strategy is a document for New Zealanders. It is for Aotearoa. It is our country. And we needed to have the Treaty of Waitangi at the front of that, the values and principles, so they're listed there at the front. And then also we've had consultations with different communities, Māori communities, Pacific communities, and more, a lot of people around the country, to ensure that this is something that everyone can take ownership, regardless of their background, you know, where they're geographically located, what kind of disability they have, what language they speak, to ensure that this is the 2016 strategy is relevant and applicable to as many people as possible.
That sounds fantastic.
It's a really awesome journey, actually, and it's so cool to see so many different people around the country having their input and then taking ownership and really caring about it. It's so encouraging to see, you know, as a young person for me, where we're headed in the future in the next 10 years.
And just one final question, Robbie. Were there any challenges developing the strategy, or what were the challenges?
Oh, look, there's always going to be challenges, and I think that, you know, when you're working with such a diverse array of people, everyone has specific focus areas. I think for me, as a young person, I can only speak to mine personally. As a young person, I think the challenge is, how are we going to make this document relevant for 10 years? That's a long time, and a lot could happen in the next 10 years. And I guess in a sense, my generation is the one that's stepping into it, the one that's inheriting it. We are the leaders of tomorrow. We are inheriting this country. So I guess it needs to be fixed and to be clear enough that there are no misinterpretations, that, you know, we've put out, this is what we expect, this is what we have right. same time being flexible enough to develop and to be, I guess, a living document that can take into consideration new issues as they pop up over the next 10 years, because we don't know what we don't know, right? And this document needs to be able to give us space to discuss some of those things without room for misinterpretation or misunderstanding. And I think another key challenge that we've had as a reference group has been this question of implementation. I spoke about it earlier. The 2001 strategy was brilliant, but there wasn't so much of a focus on how we're going to do this, how we're going to implement these core values in these apps. How are we going to achieve this? So in this new strategy, there's been huge focus on that. And, you know, we've got some other cool things happening, such as an outcomes framework, which the public will be consulted on in the near future, as well as the disability action plan. So together, all of these things, when they are put together, we hope that we can deal with some of those challenges of implementation.
Welcome back to Speak Up Kōrero here on Plains FM 96.9. You're with Sally Carlton, your host, and we're also talking with Megan McCoy, Gary Williams, Robbie Francis and
Shane McEnroe,
who are talking about disability rights and the disability strategy. We finished off by thinking about how the CRPD, or the Convention of the Rights of Persons with Disability, is influencing the current strategy. And one thing that I guess I wondered about when I read through it is the idea of the social model of disability, which came through pretty strongly, I thought, in the disability strategy. And I wondered if that ties into the CRPD at all.
Yes, it does. So one of the important things about the UN Convention is that it's really clear about the fact that disability is not something that a person with impairment necessarily has. It's about what society, the way it treats disabled people and the barriers that it puts up. So the social model of disability was in fact described in the first strategy, and so that's one of the areas where New Zealand was a bit of a leader, and it supported us when we were there negotiating the development of the convention, as Gary talked about, and it's still there in this current draft as well, because it's something that disabled people are still telling us is really important, that the focus needs to be on, you know, changing the world around us and sort of eliminating those barriers that are put up, and that's ultimately where disability happens. It's the way that people are treated and the way that they can be discriminated against that stops people from doing stuff. Yeah.
Now, they're sort of the same principles to enabling good lives, sorry.
Yes.
Very much so.
Could you explain a little bit what is enabling good lives?
Oh, wow. enabling good lives, you might need to help me here, me. It's what I've interpreted is pretty much getting all your funding all into one sort of mum and dad, her easy to use the funding how they and the child want to use it in a way which is easy for everyone.
Yeah, I see enabling good lives as a way that disabled people can have kind of conformity, so it's a new way of thinking about how disabled people can participate, putting disabled people at the centre of the awards. It's about being part of a community, it's about choice and control, it's about remembering that disabled people are not autonomous, that we've all got connections to other people, and they can be, if you like, disabled by society too. It's a new way of thinking about how to support disabled people to have good lives.
this idea of, you know, trying to encourage society to see disabled people differently. Have you noticed any change, those of you who were involved in the 2001 strategy and in the disability space since then? Have you noticed changes since that 2001 strategy?
Can I butt in? Sort of me being a newbie to the disability sector, it is changing, but there's those people who are sort of, especially ones around unemployment, are sort of a bit cynical. So now I don't put, I've got a learning facility, I just leave that out. They got to find that out on the first week.
But, oh, I said that attitude that I'm changing as we become a more sophisticated society, but there's still a long way to go. So, you know, there's still discrimination against disabled people because they're disabled people.
We're all on the walker together, just which way we go, no one knows.
A beautiful description. How about in the office, Megan? Have you noticed any changes over time?
Well, I don't think I've been around long enough in this role to really be able to say, but I suppose people tell me that there have been changes, that there is more and different supports available for people, that people are getting to have more of a say more often in things that are important to them. But I'm also hearing lots that there's not enough of that going on, that there's still too many situations happening out there where disabled people don't get to make choices, where they aren't listened to, and where they don't get treated in the right way. So I suppose my impression from what I hear out in the community and talking to lots of disabled people is that, yep, there's been some changes, but we've still got some way to go.
Just to change the focus slightly now, Gary mentioned before, and I think, Robert, you've touched on it too, the idea that New Zealand was quite influential in drafting the convention. And I think it's quite often said New Zealand's doing relatively well in the disability rights space. I just wondered if you had any thoughts about why that might be the case, but also where you think there's room for improvement still.
Yeah, well, I've worked in the disability sector around the world, and you know, the general view globally is that New Zealand are the forefront runners in disability rights, and we are to a certain degree. I would agree with that on the most part. You know, disability rights around the world are lagging behind other rights, and there are significant improvements that need to be made. But even in New Zealand, you know, we, as Megan said, we still have a long way to go. There are still New Zealanders, disabled Kiwis, who do not feel safe in their environments, who do not have access to communities, who don't feel that they have the same rights as other people. And we've got evidence of that. We know it's happening. And it doesn't often make the headlines, because these are people who have a voice but have been, whose voice has been, I guess, maybe silenced by the rest of society, by louder voices, whoever it may be, whatever it may be. There are people who exist in our societies who are living the lives of second-class citizens. It's we know it's happening. And this is why we're all so passionate about what we do, because, you know, for me as a disabled woman, I grew up in a family where I received a lot of support, and my family treated me the same as my brothers. And I grew up in quite a supportive environment. But when I started to learn about people who may not have had those supports, I realized that actually I have a responsibility to start speaking out and to start working on these things, because, you know, at the bottom of it all, you know, in the words of Brooke Fraser, the Kiwi singer, she says, "Now that I have seen, I am responsible." And I think all of us, we feel some responsibility to speaking out. And these are we're not just talking about disability rights, we're talking about human rights. We're talking about basic human rights that all people should be afforded, that unfortunately some people in New Zealand still aren't.
We've seen that people first run a speaking up course, and it was very much showed there's still that left out discrimination in New Zealand. There was people making complaints on the day.
About discrimination?
Yep.
Mm.
Around 50% made a complaint on the day.
Goodness, that's really high.
Yeah.
I also, like Robbie, I also worked internationally in the area of disability inclusive development, and whenever anyone I met overseas said, oh, you're from New Zealand, oh, you guys are really, really good on disability rights, and I was always really chuffed to hear that, even though I hadn't worked that much in New Zealand and I didn't know. So I was really stoked when the opportunity came up for me with my current role as a director. I thought, oh, this will be really awesome. I get to see, you know, what a developed country and what New Zealand looks like, and see what all the fuss is about internationally. And I suppose there's two things that I've learned. One is that no country, including our own, is doing perfectly, and as Robbie was just saying, there's still too many people out there who don't get to have a say and who are having, you know, facing some really tough situations. The other thing I suppose I've learned, and it's through some of the international work I've done in this role, is that one of the things where I do think New Zealand is doing well, and I'm not saying we're perfect at it, but where we are comparative to other countries doing well, is in working directly with disabled people, working in a co-design way. And I think the reference group that we have for this new disability strategy is just one example of that. So, you know, I suppose for us, you know, we see it and we just see it as part of a normal way of working, and we see all of the things that we need to improve in. But compared to other countries, they don't often work directly with disabled people to make decisions that are important to them. So that's something I suppose that I'm proud of, that I think we're doing quite well in New Zealand.
It's interesting actually, because Robert, you mentioned that it's not just disability rights, it's human rights. And we always say, you know, the human rights approach is to not just consult, but really work alongside the people who are being affected. So yes, you're doing a kind of modelling that, which is really great to see.
I was just going to say, you know, the day that I got a job where my disability, what, you know, the world considers as a weakness, or society might consider as a weakness, first time I got a job in a place where my disability was considered a strength, I tell you what, it feels so good. It feels so good to be valued for who I am. I can't change who I am. And, you know, to celebrate that, and to celebrate the diversity and what I bring as someone with a diverse experience, and to put that on the table as something that's of value, is such a good feeling. And I'm really, really lucky to have had that experience, and to have that as an ongoing experience. So, you know, Megan's definitely right. We've had some incredible leaps and bounds in New Zealand, and the fact that we've got a space to talk about these things as disabled people is incredible. The fact that we can talk to you here and now is incredible. And it needs to become the norm, you know. It needs to become something that's celebrated and valued, which is not something that happens everywhere, you know.
Well, on that nice positive note, I think it might be time for your song, actually, Robbie, which is The Black Keys' Gold on the Ceiling. follow you with Sally, Shane, Gary, Robbie and Megan on Speak Up Code Aotearoa, discussing disability rights and the disability strategy. And this final segment, we're going to think a little bit more about the strategy, placing it in context, and where we're hoping to go in New Zealand in the disability rights space. So I guess I'll just open the floor to whoever would like to talk about it. Do you think, or how do you think the strategy is going to have a positive influence in the disability rights space?
Oh, look, I'm super excited about it. I'm probably, I think, the youngest member on the reference group. And, you know, in 10 years' time, I'm a student at the moment, and I would like to think of myself as someone who's stepping into the future and inheriting this beautiful country of Aotearoa. And to be involved in that and to be part of shaping the next 10 years and what's going to be like for disabled Kiwis is an incredible opportunity. And I think, you know, all of these conversations are just so exciting. You know, we're inheriting our future here. I mean, everything from down to the language that's used, what's talked about, how it's going to be implemented, what actions are going to take. You know, this is exciting times. I mean, we've, as we talked about before, we've made leaps and bounds and we've still got some improvements to make. But this is it. This is it happening here and now. And it's an exciting future.
Well, thank you, Lila. I'm a bit more progressive than that, actually. I'm hoping that strategy will deliver tangible outcomes for disabled people, and in 10 years' time, when they're retired, I can look back and say that we did this, we did a good job, and we've set the future up well for the next generation of disabled people. Actually, I'm not that concerned about my generation, because it is what it is. If we can stand up for perhaps the disabled people who are born here, then they can have good schooling, they can get a job, they can do all the things that their siblings, their cousins, their parents, everybody does.
Just to get treated the same as everyone else.
It's just about the time that when we talk about the same, it's a good thing. It has to be good.
Gary, how do you think, what are some of the actions or measures? I know this will be part of the action plan, but have you got a sense of what some of those measures might be?
I'm thinking that easy data that we might look at, like employment, like education outcomes, like income, like where people live and how they live. Those are the kind of issues that I've been looking to.
And I think also from my perspective, when it comes to the outcomes framework, we want to know how disabled people are faring compared to non-disabled people. We know there are some significant gaps, particularly in employment as well, and I think we want to be able to reduce the gap between disabled and non-disabled people. But in addition to that, you know, within the disability community, we want to know how different people are going. We know that disabled people are unique, no two people are the same, but we also know there are some groups of disabled people who often get left behind. So it's not just about, you know, the 1.1 million and how are they going. Within that, how are different groups of people doing when it comes to employment or education? You know, their lives might look quite different to others, and that might be okay, but I think we need to get that information as well.
Yeah, I guess it's one of the great challenges, isn't it, is disability is such a very, very broad term.
Can I ask a point? Have you ever thought, this may sound a bit blaffed, but ever sort of working with the big major employment agencies like Cover Staff, Trade Staff, instead of working with Workbridge? This sort of just came into my head now.
I don't know whether those things have been specifically considered, but I think one of the things that we're trying to do in the new strategy is to try and talk about disabled people being citizens, being New Zealand citizens, and therefore, you know, being eligible for and participating in the things that all other New Zealanders do. And I suppose if I'm thinking about your question, Shane, you know, some disabled people might need specialised supports and services within the employment area in order to be able to get a job, but what about all of the other providers and all of the other opportunities for all other New Zealanders? Do disabled people get to participate and have a go at that stuff as well, or is it always just the special and different stuff? And I think we need to look at both, and that's something we're trying to do in this strategy as well, is to say, hey, disabled people are part of New Zealand and they need to participate and be included in all of the programs that are happening out there, not just those for disabled people.
It's just the reason I brought it up is you can only go with one sort of employment agency. If you're linked with one, you can't go with another. That's what I've heard. Is that right?
I'm not... I
could be completely wrong. I could be just making up a...
Yeah, I don't know, and I guess that comes to the point of how do we make sure that disabled people have choice and control over their lives and the supports they receive, and it's what you guys were talking about with enabling good lives, and it's what we're trying to reinforce in this strategy as well. Yeah,
because
it might be that it's more than one agency works for you. You might have different needs, you know?
Because if you go for the bigger ones...
With different needs at different times of life.
Yeah. You can go with up to 10 employment agencies like Trade Staff and Cover Staff.
Yeah.
So that seems a bit...
Sort of building on what I think you might be talking about, Shane, is one question that was put to me that might be helpful to ask is the strategy is very aspirational, as I guess strategies tend to be. But New Zealand doesn't have any way of sort of penalising people who don't adhere to it. And would it be worth thinking about laws to try and put some of these concepts into sort of legal practice? And I'd just be interested to hear if you've got any thoughts on that.
You know, I'm thinking, Sally, that we've got laws already that people don't want to... I'm not sure that laws are the only tools that we should use. But I think that for disabled people, we've been talking for years and years and years about changing attitudes and changing the perception of disabled people. And if we can do that, that's half the battle won.
Yeah, that, Megan speaking, that was something that came through definitely in the first phase of consultation, is that when people are talking about problems and barriers that they face or their family members face or friends or whatever, ultimately when you kind of drill down and find out why on earth is this stuff happening, it comes down to attitudes. So many of the challenges that we see is because... still, unfortunately, too many people just don't really understand what disabled people can and should do, and they get treated differently, and that is, I think, such an important issue that we need to address.
Great. Well, I guess just to finish up then, we would really like this show to be used to encourage people to get involved in the strategy. So what are some of the things that people could be doing to get involved?
So a couple of things. We're having some workshops around the country where people can come and tell us what they think about the strategy. You can also hold your own workshop. I know some organisations are doing that. It might even be, you know, with a group of friends or family members. You want to get together, have a look at the strategy and see whether or not it's good enough for your perspective. And also, people can give us some feedback via email or do it online, or you can upload a video as well. I know that can be really important for people who might be sign language users, or sometimes just easier to speak into a camera rather than having to write stuff down. So there's a whole bunch of different ways people can have their feedback, and you can find all of the information on our website, which is www.jointheconversation.nz. This consultation finishes on the 21st of August, which is a Sunday, so really, really encouraging as many people as possible to have their say and to let us know whether we're on the right track. You know, we think we've done a good job with developing this current draft strategy, but we're getting heaps of really good feedback from people, so the more people who look at it and give us some ideas and suggestions, the better. I think from my perspective, it'll help make sure it's a really, really strong document.
Sounds like a great road trip you're doing. I've been looking online, it's just about every region in New Zealand.
Yeah, we're pretty busy.
Yeah.
Can I just encourage all disabled people and all people associated with the community to feedback, because the reference group is only 15 people, and we know that there's 1.2 million disabled people in the country. This is a chance to kind of give guidance for the next decade about what it's going to look like for disabled people in New Zealand.
I imagine, as well as our population ages, these sorts of strategies will become even more important, won't they? They'll touch even more people, probably.
Most definitely.
Yep, definitely, yep.
Okay, well, have you got any final comments?
We're all on the rocket together, it's just which way we're going to go. At the moment, we're going sideways.
I think we're going forward, but I think that this is an opportunity for us to kind of guide our own destiny.
Yeah, nothing about us without us.
Yep. Okay, well, that sounds like a really positive place to finish up. And everybody who's listening, disabled or not, I really encourage you to have a look at the strategy. And as Megan was saying, there's numerous ways you can get involved. So yeah, please consider it. It's obviously worth doing. Thank you very much to all of you for coming in. Kia ora.
Thanks. Cool, thanks, Ellie.
See ya.